Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is. Oh, that is just not going to work at all. Never accept a dare from Mark Walsh. Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is Leslie Kaminoff, and you may know me as the co-author of the international bestseller, Yoga Anatomy. But I'm also the co-founder of yogaanatomy.net. Now, that's a platform we built 11 years ago where we offer online courses and in-depth anatomy modules that support teachers, teacher trainings, and students all over the world. So that's why we are thrilled to be sponsoring all the incredible sessions here on the Yoga Channel, including my own. And if you feel a connection with the way I teach, I have some great news for you. We are extending scholarships to all members of the Embodiment Conference. And you can find that scholarship info and links to yogaanatomy.net in the description for this presentation and in the show notes. In the meantime, enjoy your body, enjoy your breath, and enjoy your conference. And I'll see you online.
So, have a pen and paper handy. Go run and grab that if you don't have that. I actually don't have that somewhere. And there it is. And we'll actually be doing some yoga. So if you've got a mat rolled out, that would be great. I've got one right behind me, so I'll be moving back and forth. If you have any questions, yeah, please just ask them whenever. And I'd rather make it as interactive as I can, because I think it just makes learning easier. Okay, so I actually want to start with a little brainstorming exercise. So grab your pen and your paper, and if there is one instruction you give, so I'm going to assume most of you are yoga teachers. If you aren't, this is still very relevant because it will help you interpret what your yoga teachers are saying. But if you have a really common instruction you give in your classes, one or two or three, write them down. I'll write down mine. And I definitely have one that I use all the time. Okay, I'll give you a couple more seconds to do that. And then spend a few moments thinking about cues that you use that you're not that happy with for whatever reason. Like that you keep thinking, you know, I'd like to say something else here, but I don't know what else to say. Yeah. So if you've got any of those, I have one. And the third one is just a quick brainstorm about cues you've heard a lot. Like if I just ask you, okay, what are cues you've heard in yoga class? What are some of the common conventional cues that get used a lot? Not necessarily by you, but by teachers you've had or instructions you see in videos or classes you take. And I've already written those down. There's quite a few I've got. Okay, and let me know if you need more time. Just type something in the chat. But the last one, and this one I actually want the answers to from some of you, if you're so inclined. When your students ask you questions during class, what body parts do they ask questions about? And there's a pattern there, at least in my students. What is the pattern? So you want to throw out body parts in the chat, or if you see a pattern already. Okay, somebody needs more time. Okay, spine, hands, feet, shoulders. Okay. Keep them coming. Oh, somebody else saying hands and feet. Yep. Toes. Yep. Hips. Okay. All right. So tight hips. Somebody's got tight hips is going to ask about hips. Yep. Head, chin, knees. Okay. So we're getting a pretty broad range. In my experience, the majority of questions are asked about the periphery of the body, hands, feet, toes, chin, gaze, head. And I get fewer questions about the hips or the shoulders or the spine, although those are clearly important, right? But I ask this question, so again, maybe different for you and your students, but I get questions about the periphery so often that I have to laugh every time I get a question, because it's like, once again, and sometimes it's the knees, because we're actually, the knee is the point that's moving. Yeah, so the pattern here is that we tend to focus and thus ask questions about the periphery of our body and about body parts that are moving. And the third emphasis is that we think more about the front of our body. And the reason for this is that we move generally in our lives in order to get things done, in order to accomplish goals. But, and that pattern of moving in order to achieve goals is evident also in conventional yoga instructions. Yeah? So you can do it sitting down, I'll do it sitting down, but here's a really common one, right? How do you instruct your students to bring their arms overhead? Right, and one of the most common ways that is, at least again in my experience, is inhale and reach your arms to the ceiling. Right? And so the idea is not just lift your arms, but reach something. In other words, the focus is on something external, not on something happening in here. And in order to reach farther, right? In order to reach your fingertips farther, what's the easiest way to get your fingertips higher? It's to tense the back of the neck. And that is a pattern that most of us are already too good at, right? Most of us, like, raise your hand if you need more neck tension in your life, right? Or put it in the chat. Yes, I need more neck tension. So this instruction of reaching your hands to the ceiling is actually encouraging a movement pattern that most of us are already too good at. We all know how to tense the back of the neck. What we don't know is how to relax the back of the neck. So let me give you a different instruction for this movement. Inhale and allow your arms to float out and up. And when you follow the gist of that instruction, do you end up in a different place versus following the intent of this instruction? Inhale and reach your fingertips to the ceiling and look up. Right, and from my experience in my body, floating my arms out and up feels much better, much more connected, much more integrated, much, much more supportive of my well-being than reaching my fingers to the ceiling and looking up, which simply reinforces patterns I'm already good at. So for this to make sense, I need to point out that I believe well-being is essentially a place of balance. It's not a place of extremes. And if we're moving to accomplish an external goal, the easiest, not only do we want to accomplish a goal, but we want to accomplish it with the least amount of effort, right? That makes us feel accomplished. Doing more with less just feels really good. But if I have that as my idea of what I'm doing, going farther with less effort, then I'm going to be stuck only engaging muscles. I'm good at engaging. I'm going to be stuck with only moving joints that are relatively flexible. And I'm going to avoid engaging muscles that are tight. I'm going to avoid engaging muscles that are weak. I'm going to avoid moving joints that are tight, because that just requires way too much effort without a big payback, right? Stretching what is tight requires quite a lot of diligent effort. And at the same time, we don't accomplish very much. We don't feel like we're getting, because we measure our accomplishment by how far we're getting, right? So let's do a couple of easy examples of this, right? So I'm gonna move to my mat. Come to sitting on your mat or on the floor if you don't have a mat. And have at least a blanket or a block or a cushion or something nearby. And ask yourself, do you normally sit on the floor, or do you usually sit on something a little bit higher? And again, the majority of new students I get end up sitting on the floor. And the first thing I do in every class I teach is I tell everyone, go get at least one block or one cushion. And then in every class, I have people, almost every class, experiment with sitting on the floor versus sitting on the block. And so go ahead and do that now. And most of us immediately associate sitting on the floor with a greater accomplishment, right? It's going farther down in this case. But what I'd like you to notice is your breath. Is there a difference in the spaciousness of your breath when you sit on the floor versus sitting on a block? Switches to gallery view here. And so again, if you want to type into the chat what you're experiencing, feel free. Yeah, and then there's the instruction, where should I feel this? Yeah, that's a little bit of a separate issue. Maybe we'll come around to that. I have quite open hips. So sitting on the floor for me is actually relatively easy. And yet, I can breathe more freely when I sit on something high. So there, in lots of things that we do, including yoga, there's a bit of tension between feeling more accomplished and focusing on well-being. Like a freer breath is clearly a component of well-being, right? Of feeling better. So I encourage people to sit on something higher if it helps them free their breath. And I do have a couple of students who actually feel more balanced, more spacious when they're sitting on the floor, and they tend to have strongly arched lumbar spines. So one important thing to about cueing classes for well-being rather than achievement is to allow for the difference in people's anatomies, so that you're not insisting everybody does the same thing, even if it works best for you. And there's a fine line between allowing people to do sort of something else and allowing them to just be stuck in the patterns that they are already carrying with them. So that's tricky. So come down on your back and let's do another experiment about how we move versus how we think we move, right? Because that's sort of what we're gonna base our ideas of how we cue movement on. Lie down on your back and notice that your lower back is probably not touching the floor. It's probably a little bit of a gap. Yeah, because you're maintaining that S curve in your spine when you lie sort of in shavasana with straight legs. And go ahead and bend your right knee and your right hip and hold onto the shin. And we would I would assume most of you will think of this as a leg movement, right? I'm moving my knee into my chest, that's a leg movement. But notice that you have, notice where your lower back is now. And your lower back is probably either on the floor now, or it is a lot closer to the floor than it was before. And this is part of this pattern. We're concerned about getting our knee into our chest. And we do that in whichever way requires the least amount of effort, both mental and physical. And in this case, that means rounding the lower back. Now, why is that a problem? Go ahead and rotate your tailbone back down into the floor. In other words, moving your hips. So if your lower back is rounded into the floor, that's because your hips have rotated in this direction, which is either called posterior hip tilt, or sometimes it's called outer spiral. So go ahead and rotate your hips the other way, in inner spiral or anterior hip tilt. And notice what happens in the front of the chest when you move your hips back to neutral and move your lower back towards neutral. What happens in my chest is that the front of the chest opens up. I can breathe more freely. So this pattern we're all stuck in is that when we move our periphery. We want to get our periphery into a certain place. And the thing we compromise is the breath. So we come back to this arm lifting movement, right? You can do it sitting or standing. Compare your breath when you inhale, reach your fingertips to the ceiling and look up. Versus inhale, allow your arms to float out and up. Which instruction and which movement supports a more spacious, more free, more delicious breath? Right, and for me, it's clearly the second, it's the floating rather than the reaching. Okay. The first question I asked you, what's the most common instruction you give in yoga class? For me, it's savor each breath. And I'm actually changing now to saying enjoy each breath, because I have a lot of students who are not native English speakers, and most non-native English speakers don't know what savor means, but they do know what enjoy means. I like the word savor because it adds a sort of a level of mindfulness that enjoy may not, but it's important that people actually understand what you're trying to say. Enjoy each breath. This is by far the most common instruction I give. And just adding that to your classes, I'm quite convinced is going to make it easier for your students to actually increase their well-being, their yoga. Okay, so, whoops, there's my block, so much for mindfulness. So this is a little technique I use quite a lot to teach people to move from the breath, because that's one way to savor and enjoy your breath, right? That enjoying your breath requires several things. It requires you to be aware of your breath, and then it requires you to actually unobstruct your breath, kind of free your breath. And then you actually kind of have to set an intention there to really enjoy what you're doing. And so this, I learned this little technique actually from Leslie Kahneman. Hi, Leslie. Put one hand on your belly button, either by sitting or while standing, and one hand on your breastbone. And then close your eyes if you can. And tune into your breath. And notice where your inhales go. And if they go into your belly right now, just belly breathing, which is a fine way to breathe, but it's not the best way to breathe when you're doing something physically more demanding. So tone your lower belly, and then notice how the breath quite naturally starts expanding the front of the ribcage. And as you exhale, feel the breastbone settle back down. So as you inhale, you probably feel your breastbone float up a little bit if you keep your belly slightly toned. And then as you exhale, let the breastbone settle back down. Keep allowing that movement to happen, and even allow it to sort of become exaggerated. So as you inhale, your breastbone floats up a little bit higher. As you exhale, it settles back down. Inhale, breastbone floats up. Exhale, settles back down. Once you feel that movement, even without your hands, you let your arms dangle, and let your arms hang, and then inhale. Breastbone floats up, and maybe your collarbones begin to broaden a little bit. And then as you exhale, everything settles back down. Inhale, breastbone floats up, collarbones broaden. Notice how that movement of the breath begins to ripple out into your arms and actually rotates your arms out. Inhale, float your breastbone up. Broaden your collarbones, allow your arms to rotate out. And as you exhale, feel your arms rotate back in and come closer to the torso. And keep allowing all these movements to ripple out more and more from the breath until a deep, delicious inhale floats your arms way out and up. And then you can exhale into a standing forward bend. And when you come into that, and then actually come back up to stand, float back up. And so this is one way in which I teach people not to just synchronize their movement with their breath, but to actually learn to move from the breath. Those are two different things, right? Synchronizing your movements to your breath, that's a good start, but sort of inhale and reach the fingertips to the ceiling. This doesn't quite get you to the same place, to the same experience as letting your inhale ripple out into your arms, allowing the arms to flow down. Okay, so then let's actually go on to Uttanasana. And so one more time, inhale, let the breastbone float up and the collarbones broaden and the arms float up. Out reaching, and then exhale, release into the forward bend, surrender to the forward bend. What are you doing with your hands? And I wouldn't say there's a right or wrong way, but if you are reaching your hands towards the floor, right? And again, if your legs are long, your arms are short, and in order to reach your hands farther, even here, all you need to do is tense the back of the neck. But this is a forward bend. Right? This is not a back bend. Does it make sense biomechanically to tense the back of the neck? Does it make sense from a perspective of well-being? I would say no. So if you tense the back of your neck in Uddanasana, can you stop? And so I instruct generally in Uddanasana for people to hold on to the opposite elbows to disrupt this tendency to want to reach, right? This normal pattern of, because that's how we move to get things done, we move to take a mug off the top shelf, right? We lean forward to open the car door, or whatever it is. And then here's so what's the next pose? We're slowly moving through sun salutations. What's the next pose here? And how is it instructed? How do you instruct it? Ardha Uttanasana, right? Coming halfway up from Uttanasana. One of the most common ways I hear it instructed is inhale, look up, right? Have you heard that? If you have, type, you know, say yes, inhale, look up. I've heard that before. Now, what does inhale, look up? What does it tell you to do? It tells you to do this. Right? Tells you to back bend your neck. And the idea is that if you can look forward, your torso kind of has to follow along with the gaze. But actually, that doesn't work very well. So what I say here is inhale, float halfway up on your breath. And so again, compare those two variations and notice which one creates a more balanced feeling pose, a more spacious pose, a more integrated, connected pose. Inhale, look up.
versus inhale. Load up on your breath and extend through the crown of your head.
And also, often say, now, so if you, again, if you're thinking, oh, part of this pose is to have your fingertips on the floor. If you decide beforehand that that's a sort of necessary part of this pose, where my hands are as important, then you should limit your ability to really free your breath. But keep my hands on the floor, I can, but keep my fingertips on the floor, I can still free my breath relatively well. But if I have my palms on the floor, no way.
So when I instruct this pose, I just say, inhale, float halfway up on your breath. Place your hands where they fall, on your legs,
where they need to be so that your breath can be free. So notice how many yoga poses you find yourself in where you've decided where your hand should be. And then you sort of maybe try to do the best you can with that hand placement, right? And again, the farther you reach with your hand, the more, in order to reach farther, the easiest thing to do to reach farther is to compromise your breath. So let's actually skip a couple poses. Let's move to, let's actually get out of sun salutation. Let's do Trikonasana. It's possibly the most, well, it's one of the most obvious poses in which to notice this. I'm going to face you to make it more obvious what's going on here. So float your arms out to the sides, you know, legs in Trikonasana position, and then exhale, float forward and release down into the pose. And then again, people tend to have an idea of where their hand should be. And for some people, that's hand must be on the floor. For some people, it's no, hands on the chair, that's okay. No. Go ahead and play around with the hand position. And so something I actually do a lot, again, in my classes, is I actively encourage people to do a pose two different ways, at least. Try two different things and notice how it changes how you feel. So I'm basically instructing to do their own little experimentations, because when you experiment, when you change something and you compare, it's much easier to tune into what's happening. Like, it's much easier to notice that your breath is compromised when you contrast that feeling with a different pose or a different version where you're going, oh, wait, now I can breathe, right? So I actually will tell people, okay, move your hand lower. What does that feel like? What happens to your breath? Okay, move your hand higher. What does that feel like? What happens to your breath? And this is something I learned from one of the other yoga teachers here in Chiang Mai. I'm very grateful for her. She's actually listening. Hi, Esther. Instead of telling people where to put a body part, start saying, what happens if you put your hand higher on your shin? Right? Because we're not, it's not about making it perfect. It's about encouraging your students to engage in an act of self-exploration. Yeah? Even if they were sort of, if they could perfectly follow all your instructions, that's not an exercise in mindfulness. Just following somebody else's instructions is not nearly as powerful as experimenting with different options yourself and noticing, asking yourself, why do I choose this one over the other one? And then you can ask yourself, is it my ego choosing one version, or is it my sense of well-being choosing a version, right? And again, and the lower you put your hand in Trikonasana, the harder it is to breathe. Now, some people can put their palm flat on the floor and still breathe quite spaciously. And if you can do that, then there's nothing really wrong with putting your hand flat on the floor. Except that if that's still more important than the breath, you're still being misdirected in a way. Are you still being directed towards achievement, away from well-being? And again, there is often some amount of conflict between them. Okay, I want to pause, see if there's any question. Okay, that absolutely makes sense. Okay, all right, good. If something that I'm saying doesn't make sense, if you disagree, please write it in the chat. I think the best way to sort of really get through this is again, this act of exploration. Right? But what if, right? So feel free to ask questions. Okay. Now, when you begin to free your breath in your practice, so in Trikonasana, for example, one way to free the breath is to simply let go of the sense of achievement you're getting from putting your hand on the floor and just say, okay, well, maybe that isn't actually the best place. Maybe put my hand a little bit higher. But there are other ways to free your breath. And so what happens in Trikonasana generally, like where is your torso? Where is your student's torso? Where are your student's torsos in Trikonasana? They're generally inside the front leg, right? And the lower they've decided to place their hand, the more the torso tends to collapse inside the front leg. And that means the front of the torso is shortening and that makes it harder to breathe. So taking the hand higher, taking the emphasis away from the periphery is one way to help free the breath, help people enjoy their breath. Don't sacrifice the breath for the hand placement. Let go of the idea of where the hand needs to be. Put your hand where it falls when you have a free and delicious breath. Right? So the idea is give more instructions about the core, about the breath, about the hips, about the spine, and fewer instructions about the periphery, the hands, the gaze, the hand, head, the feet. So here's another instruction that works really well in Trikonasana. If you may have noticed it, my torso is collapsing in, partly because I want to reach my hand farther, but part of what causes my torso to collapse inside the front leg is that my front sit bone is actually sticking out behind me, and my front leg is internally rotated. So try this out, Trikonasana. On an exhale, scoop your front sit bone underneath you in this direction. This is outer spiral. You're spiraling your front thigh outward. Notice some of you will try to move the foot, rotate the foot out. And I know you can't see my foot. Sorry, let me move further back. Yeah? But I say spiral your thigh out. I don't mean for you to turn your foot, right? It's much easier for you to move your foot. And again, that's where your attention is. So just move the sit bone. So I'm going to do that now. You can just watch. On my next exhale, I'm going to rotate my left sit bone, front sit bone, more underneath me. When you do that, you can probably see that my breath becomes more free. Why is that?
We have one more question.
Yeah.
Saying Talia asked about her knees touching the floor during sun salutation. She feels she can't keep her knees off the floor going into upward dog, but many people manage to keep knees off floor, but she doesn't feel she has strength in her arms and wrists. So that can be a challenge during flows.
Okay, great question. I'll address it really quickly because I might forget. I don't teach up dog, I teach cobra instead. I always keep my knees on the floor. I don't think up dog is a particularly useful pose because it tempts us into compromising something we're really good at doing already, which is compromising our lower back. It's really easy to just collapse into the lower back in up dog. She's asking, well, I can't get my knees off the floor. That's an achievement question, right? I'm not pointing fingers, we all do this. Right? This is part of the human condition. But who cares? Can you breathe in that pose? That's the question I'm interested in. Yeah. And I can breathe much better in cobra than in up dog. So to the point where I don't even instruct up dog. In fact, I've forgotten that it is part of sun salutations. I just put cobra in there. Because I find that people can create a freer breath more easily in cobra, most people. And again, if you can breathe deliciously in up dog, by all means, do an up dog. Yeah? Okay, I hope that answers the question. Let me get back to Trikonasana. And the same thing actually applies in up dog in cobra. We can go there next. But when you align your... So part of what we do to reach farther and in that process compromise our breath is that we end up misaligning our hips and misaligning our spine, moving them out of neutral. Just like that first thing we did where we were lying on the floor and brought a knee into the chest, right? We can get the knee farther with like no effort just by rounding the lower back. But is that really the smart thing to do it? I would say it's not. Because when we move the hips back, so in this case, Trikonasana, moving that front sit bone more underneath, it frees my breath. And you can probably see that. The things you can't see, probably, are, but you can feel them if you do that, is moving your hip back towards neutral in Trikonasana will give you a stretch you were previously not feeling, probably in the inner thigh of the front leg. And it will compel you to engage core muscles you were very happily ignoring before, right? So moving by following the path of least resistance, which is how we generally move, means that we're only engaging the strong muscles in order to move the flexible joints, and we ignore our weak muscles, we never engage them, that's why they're weak, and we don't stretch our tight muscles, that's why they're tight, because we want to go farther with less effort. So if you instruct your students to free their breath, in order to free your breath, you have to get off the path of least resistance. You have to stop only engaging what's strong. Right? In this case, scooping that left side, I'm gonna do it on the other side, right side, right? Several things are going on here. Getting that front symbol more underneath, first of all, requires awareness of where my body parts are in space. What happened to my core when I was focusing on getting my hand to the floor. And then it requires you to undo that. So exhale, scoop that front sit bone underneath you. How do you do that? It involves all kinds of core muscles, small stabilizing muscles. Muscles you're not good at engaging, to the point where some people just are not able to figure out how to do that, how to actually get their sit bone moving in that direction. But in the process of playing around with that, you have to, you're compelled to develop better awareness of your core and of your breath. So takeaways, create more cues about the core, the hips, the breath, the breastbone, and fewer about the periphery. Let's do one more example here. Tree pose. And so come to standing, lift your toes, spread them, extend them forward. Inhale your right leg up. Hold onto the shin. And by the way, this is the same shape we made lying on the floor, right? And the same tendency here as we tend to round the back to hold onto the shin. So free your breath. Float your breastbone away from the belly button. Broaden across your collarbones. Notice how that frees your breath and how it dials up the hip stretch. It's not a heinous hip stretch. It's not a terrible hip stretch, right? But we're good at avoiding the tiniest inkling of a stretch. So then put your foot in your inner leg, inner ankle, inner calf, inner thigh. And now I like my foot on my inner thigh, and I tend to put it there right away. Here's another really great thing to add to your, like how you cue your classes. Give people several options for each pose. Give the easiest option first. And ideally demo it. So I failed right there. I put my foot here. But I did at least say, put your foot in your ankle. Even better would be if I always said, okay, put your foot in your ankle, put your foot in your calf, or put your foot in your thigh. And then what's the next thing people do? bring their arms up. So I intentionally disrupt that pattern and say, bring your hands to your hips. I say that maybe the second most common thing I say in my classes, bring your hands to your hips. Because we are notoriously bad about paying attention to our hips. We have no idea what our hips are. We do know what our hands are doing, where they are in space. So by putting your hands on your hip bones, you can notice what your hips are doing. And what are the hips doing in tree? For most people, the hip of the lifted leg will be higher than the hip of the standing leg. Why is that? And so whenever I ask, why do we move this way? The answer is always, because I'm following the path of least resistance. I'm trying to go farther with less effort. In this case, lifting that hip, I'm going to do the other leg. Lifting that hip of the lifted leg. Well, lower it, see what happens. Well, let me tell you, try it out. And this is interesting. Lots of people can't figure out how to lower the hip. They're so stuck in this path of getting farther with less effort that they can't actually get out. So what happens when you lower the hip of the lifted leg towards neutral, which means towards neutral, towards level, horizontal. Notice I said towards and not to, and I'll get back to that in a moment. But when I lower the hip that's too high towards neutral, I get an inner thigh stretch I wasn't getting before. And my left side body lengthens. I'm no longer side bending, because if my shoulders are level and one hip is hiked up, right, then I'm side bending my spine. And guess what? When you're side bending your spine, it compromises your breath. You can breathe better with a spine that's neutral versus a spine that's bending sideways, right? You can try that out. So that's a great example of a pose where we are compromising the alignment of our hips and spine, because when your hips move out of alignment, your spine has to move out of alignment. It has no other choice. We can do a little experiment about that.
Another question, if it's okay.
Yes.
Sherny had asked, how do you instruct a student to breathe when the student has a rounded back?
When the student has a rounded back?
Mm.
Meaning when they're in a forward bend or when they're rounding their back too much. So I'm going to assume the latter. And I'm realizing we're very quickly running out of time here. So let's actually go to a forward bend first, because that question, then we'll do a back bend. So, but the general instruction, whenever I find, and this is part of the common pattern, we tend to round our backs too much. And this is partly related to the fact that we tense our necks too much. So I won't be able to get into details of this, but that's because of a reflex called reciprocal inhibition. And look that up, or you can go to my website and go to one of my other workshops, which are longer. When you tense the back of the neck, it actually forces a relaxation in the middle back muscles, which collapses the front of the chest more. So my favorite instruction for this is this idea of blow your breastbone away from your belly button. And so that's probably the third most common thing I say in classes. Blow your breastbone away from your belly button, or allow your breastbone to float away from your belly button. So there's another thing I want to emphasize, which is using passive voice is sometimes really powerful, because it allows you to notice that movement is not just about doing more. If you want to go farther, you've got to do more. It's not true. This movement is the result of some muscles contracting, but other muscles relaxing. And so instructing, and we tend to forget about the relaxation part. So instructing that relaxation is a really powerful thing to do. Okay, so let's take a look at what moving the breastbone away from the belly button might mean in a pose like Balakonasana, right? So this, I come into the pose, observe your breath, observe your spine.
tune into your breath and see if you can free your breath. Lots of people do this pose this way with actually a back bend in the neck, even though they know this is a forward bend. Why do we do that? Because by tensing the back of the neck, that actually causes the upper back to collapse more, which gets my chin closer to the floor, which makes me feel more accomplished. Okay, so how do you get out of this stuck place? Because it's not an easy place to breathe. It's not a very comfortable place, right? So inhale, load your breastbone away from the belly button, and float the back of the head away from the shoulder blades. Move down into your sit bones, lengthen through the crown of your head. That's maybe the fourth most common thing I say in class. Send energy up through the crown of the head, but lengthen through the crown. Let me know if that didn't answer your question. But again, if you see your students stuck here, how do you, you notice that that is not the best place to be in terms of well-being and a free and delicious breath. So inhale, float the breastbone away from the belly button, float the back of the head away from the shoulder blades. Stay long as you exhale and surrender forward without collapsing.
Okay. And so, I wanted to get back to this idea of the words two versus towards. Right? And when we were doing tree, I said, move your hips towards level, not to level. And the reason that's a useful change in how to cue is that it allows people to find whatever, they can find the right level of intensity for them. For some people, getting the hips perfectly level may actually create too much stretch in the inner thigh, right? So it's not about making it perfect. It's another thing I like to say. It's not about making it perfect. It's about making it a little bit better. Asking yourself, what can I do right now to enjoy my practice a little bit more, to free my breath a little bit more? Yeah. So, by the way, if you're furiously taking notes, I'm going to, if you want to, if there's some way that you can give me your email address, I will share my notes for this class with you very happily. And so I've got a couple, this table of verbs or phrases that are commonly used and sort of what I've been using instead, right? This has been a journey for me. But so the first one, the first example we used was reach, right? Reach your arms, and I say float. Contract, relax. Extend, engage versus surrender. To, compared to, towards. Closer to, instead of, I'm sorry, that's switched. Perfectly, instead of, and then instead, closer to. More, versus just right. Active voice versus passive voice. And do X versus what happens if you do X. And then the last one, maybe instead of focusing on attention, focus on awareness. Right? And that last change, we tend to pay attention to the periphery. And what really helps us integrate our body and mind is to not just be attentive to one body part, but to notice what's happening everywhere else, to hold more and more body parts in your mind at the same time. So let's do one last pose for this. It's a reclining spinal twist. And let's do it with one leg straight, sort of the easiest variation, right? So you lie down on your back, bring your arms out to the sides. You bend one knee and you plant your foot, and to actually create a more spacious pose, you can press that left foot down, lift your hips, move them over towards the left a little bit, and then exhale your left knee across the right leg into the spinal cord. Now, and your goal-oriented mind, your ego, immediately interprets this pose as, oh, this is about getting the knee to the floor, right? So I don't say,
Exhale, bring the knee to the floor. Then exhale, twist to the right, release the knee down to the floor. If you want a deeper stretch, maybe place your right hand on the outer left knee. And instead of pressing down, just add the weight of the right hand to the left leg and see if that deepens the stretch in a way that feels even better. And then notice that your attention is probably in the left knee. Have you noticed what's going on with your left shoulder blade? So this is this moving from attention to awareness. Can you bring your awareness to a body part you're not naturally attentive to? And so what's happened with the left shoulder blade? It has probably come off the floor. Why has the left shoulder blade come off the floor? Because lifting the left shoulder blade off the floor allows you to get your left knee closer to the floor. It allows you to accomplish more with less effort. You don't have to twist as far, and yet you can feel more accomplished because you got your knee closer to the floor. So, having brought your awareness to the shoulder blade, now instead of pulling it down to the floor, can you figure out how to relax what is tight in order for gravity to take the shoulder blade back down again towards the floor, not to the floor? And when you allow gravity to take the shoulder blade down towards the floor, how do you feel? What happens to your breath? What happens to your sense of spaciousness? Does it go up? For me, it goes up, right? So again, just trying to get the knee closer to the floor doesn't make the pose more effective. It actually just sort of teaches you how to go farther with less effort, which pretty much means not stretching what's tight, not strengthening what's weak.
We're just coming up to time. That's okay. Yeah. I know we should have time for a couple more questions just after this. Yeah. I'll be quick.
If there are any other questions, now would be a good time to ask them.
Yeah, so stick them in the chat there and I will just do a quick summary. So if people are interested in this, seeing this session again to have it in your own personal library to digest and reflect on, you can purchase the conference. During the conference, it's 50% off and you have access to all the channels, all the speakers, all the presenters with summary notes and extra learning cues. The conference is free for the next 48 hours on various streams, so you can see it through the website or go onto Facebook and see all the lives. What else? Thank you to our channel sponsor, yogaanatomy.net, for facilitating this channel. And anything else?
My website.
Your website, yes, we're going to share that in the chat. So Galia will put the chat in, put the thing in the chat. And there's also a coffee break portal room if you want to discuss with the participants what you've learned. The links will be in the chat shortly. So
okay, right afterwards?
You can access that, yeah, at any time. Yes, yeah, the coffee breaks, yeah.
I'll check that out. Yeah. So if you're interested in studying with me more, I do have a weekly streaming class subscription, and I also have workshops, and you can find all those on my website, and the link will be in the chat. And we do have a few more minutes, so if there are any questions.
I go back up. There was someone asking, their husband were having difficulties with Denver dog. He has injuries with wrist and shoulder. Do you have any tips on that?
Yes, absolutely. So again, with this idea of focusing on well-being, if there's a particular pose that just doesn't work for you, because it's actually re-injuring previous injuries, just forget about that pose. So if you've got wrist and shoulder, so wrist issues in downward dog, couple of things, you can get yourself a pair of push-up bars, and that might do a lot to alleviate your wrist problems, because your wrist can be in a much more neutral position. If it's a minor issue, notice whether you are, and I'm going to come closer, let's see if I can get a flat surface here. If you find that you're holding your hands like this, with the index finger knuckle off the mat, that's going to exacerbate your wrist problems because all the weight is now in your carpal tunnel. So if you press down through the base of the index finger, that's going to require you to engage muscles you don't like engaging, but it takes the weight literally out of the wrist. You can look from this angle, you can see no space here. If I press down through the base of the index finger, I don't know if that's visible, you start getting more space. So this is another thing I say a lot. Make your practice smarter than your habits. Sometimes that requires you to engage something you don't like engaging. Sometimes it might require you to relax something you don't like relaxing, like the back of the neck. Now shoulders, downward dog shoulders. If you have this idea that the pose is more accomplished, the closer you get to the floor, downward dog can actually not just exacerbate existing shoulder problems, it can actually create shoulder problems. So let go of this idea of wanting to get your head to the floor and simply allow your shoulders to be a little bit farther off the floor. I instruct this a lot to say, okay, downward dog, load your armpits away from the floor. Not having seen you, obviously, or your husband, I'm pretty sure that just, again, letting go of this goal of wanting to go farther into the pose, just allowing the shoulders to be above the line between the wrists and the hips, that's going to probably solve the shoulder problems. And lift the shoulders much higher if you need to. Huh? If you're already getting a good stretch here, there's no need to go farther. And then one more option for the wrists, dolphin instead of downward dog. Completely solves the wrist problem, right? How that feels in the shoulders is, I don't know, you'll have to try it out. Okay, any other questions? All right, I'm just gonna glance over my notes here. And say a couple more things.
Emphasize. And if you can give us the one and body tip when you're ready as well.
Oh yeah. So my one embodiment tip is the thing I say the most in class. Savor or enjoy each breath. Enjoy each breath. Those three words contain so much. And each breath. This moment in time is the one that matters, not the next moment, not the previous one. It's not savor every breath. Right? Oh, I failed because I missed one back 2 minutes ago. No, savor this breath. Enjoy this breath. And do what you can to enjoy your breath more. Align yourself differently. Explore your positioning. Tune into your breath. Tune into your body. Enjoy each breath. Thanks for joining. Let me know if you have any questions. Oh, and if you want to receive the notes from this, how should we do that?
I've just been taking their addresses there, so I'll make a note and I'll make a list and email you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Absolutely. So if you want the notes, just type your email address into the chat. And Tessa will collect them and send them to me. Okay. And if you have any questions, once you get that email, you just reply to that email and ask me, you know, if you got questions about this a month or a year from now, just send me an email. Okay. Thank you.